I'd like to call the meeting to order. For the record, let it show that all board members are present. Trustee Gary Criddle, can you please lead us in the pledge?
And? Salute. Pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Please be seated.
Thank you very much. We do have one correction to the agenda. If you could please turn to page 15. Okay, under item personnel services number 3, partway down, you'll see the name of Penny Lossing under the certificated resignations. Penny Lossing should be moved down to number 7 in the classified resignations. So everything's the same, just put it in the wrong place there. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you'll be muted for a majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. There was no action to report out of closed session. Comments from board members? Trustee Davis. Trustee Davis, do you have any comments? I take that as a no. Trustee Crawford, comments? No comments, Trustee Crawford. Trustee Boone?
No comments at this time.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
No comments tonight, thank you.
Trustee Hasty?
Not at this time, Mr. Rasmussen.
Thank you. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Just real quick, I want to thank all of our firefighters who are out there right now protecting our community. My thoughts and prayers are with your families and keeping everybody safe. Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to give the public just a little update on our superintendent search. The application deadline is this Friday, July 23rd at 5 p.m. The board will be holding a special meeting next Thursday, July 29th, a closed session meeting to discuss or review the applications and then make a determination of those applications that are going to go to interviews for August 7th and 8th. And our current timeline is hopefully going to be able to announce a new superintendent at the August 24th board meeting. So kind of our timeline of where we're at there. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Angela.
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen. Hopefully we are all doing well, despite the fact that it's a little toasty out. Before I get started, I would like to echo the comments of Mr. Gary Criddle. The teachers union as well would like to wish and thank all of our firefighters for all of their efforts and all the emergency personnel. Our community knows all too well the struggle and the hardship and the tragedy that comes with these fires. And so those people that are out fighting the good fight, we wish them well. We wish them safety as well. As far as our muta comments for this evening, we just kind of want to keep things a little light and positive this evening and also maybe, hopefully, have the meeting not last quite as long as some of our previous meetings have, although we've had a lot of pertinent business to discuss, but try to get us all home in time to maybe enjoy something of an evening. We are, in fact, looking forward to the upcoming new school year. And so along those lines, we would like to welcome and congratulate all of the new teachers who have already signed on with the district. We're happy to welcome them and wish them the best and let them know that we are a resource here for them. Additionally, anybody who may be listening or anyone who may pass this info along, we are definitely happy to have a whole bunch more. We still have a lot of openings to fill, and so the more the merrier, they say. Also, we would like to extend a couple of congratulations messages to a couple of our teachers who have taken on admin positions for this coming year and have been accepted for those. Kylie and Lori Bowles were longtime teachers and members of our unit and now are going to be members of another unit, and we wish them well, congratulate them. Also, looking at the board agenda, it may be a few minutes premature, but it looks like we may also owe a welcome back to Jennifer Psalia. So if that does happen, take our premature slightly a welcome back there. We are also really looking forward to working with our sites, our teachers, our admin, the community, the district office on the expanded learning opportunities that are coming along, the funding for those. We've also got some professional development and a lot of other exciting things coming up for this year that also is going to be different from last year and even different from the year before. Also, as far as bargaining, just a couple of quick things about the fact that we have started off some initial bargaining sessions. Both sides, to their credit, have said that we would like to put last year in the rearview mirror, put that away, package it up, leave it where it lie, and have a positive and collaborative go of things from here on out. And so far, that has started well. We would like to say that we do appreciate the tone and tenor of things as they have been going along. So far, things are very positive and collaborative, early stages, but we're working along, and we definitely want to continue along those lines. And the district has expressed the same to us, so it sounds like we are off to a good and positive start along those lines. Just to finish things off for my comments this evening, we do want to wish everyone the best as we continue to now somewhat hurriedly prepare for the rapidly approaching new school year. So thank you so much and have a good evening.
Thank you, Mrs. Stiegel. Next, we have Operating Engineers Local Union Number 3.
Well, this
is Mr. Huerta.
If you don't recognize me, I did shave off my beard, so I'm hoping that you I will take my comments as the same person. Number one, I just wanted to make a brief procedural issue. I did try to log on this morning or this afternoon at 4:30 to the closed session item. I did want to make a comment on the closed session item. And I waited and waited. And about 4:37, I sent an email to Mr. Williams saying, what's going on here? I'd like to make a comment on this particular section. And I just want to point out, on your own board packet, agenda item page number 2, it clearly states, and I say this especially if we're going to have a closed session item on the 29th. The second to the last paragraph says the following. Pursuant to Government Code Section 54954.3, members of the public shall be given the opportunity to address the board on closed session items prior to the board's consideration of the item. That was not allowed to happen today. So I want to remind you that that is a Brown Act violation if you don't allow the public. And I'm a member of the public. Even if I'm a member of the union, I'm a member of the public. And so I want to remind you that that is a Brown Act violation. Number 2, I want to make sure that you understand when I'm told at the bargaining table that our proposals will be brought to you at the next closed session, it needs to get agendized. Because every place else that I have agendas, when operating engineers is being considered in closed session, it's agendized with a reference to a government code section saying operating engineers bargaining session. I can show you 100 other agendas where that is said. And so it's not happening here. And my worry is that when I was told, well, we bring it up at the closed session items, a member of the public cannot comment on something that's not agendized. And so if we have a comment or a closed session scheduled for July 29th about the superintendent, the public needs to be allowed to speak before you go into closed session. So please consider my concern. I have sent to each of you a communication about the status of bargaining. I have referenced an email that I sent you in May about a structural problem that we have regarding the minimum wage. That needs to get fixed. One way or the other, it's going to get fixed. I'm proposing a solution that will fix it. If by January 1 of this 2022, it's not fixed, there's going to be a violation of California law. So I strongly urge you to urge your bargaining team to come up with a solution that doesn't violate the law. I've made a proposal that would do that. In addition to that, I've sent you communication about your proposal. Our proposal clearly identifies the cost of living for employees in the state of California and specifically at Marysville Unified School District. I hope you consider that. The wage proposal is fair. Additionally, the fact that our employees served as essential workers throughout this entire pandemic also needs to be recognized. So I hope you will consider our proposals. Thank you very much.
So, Mr. Huerta, just a clarifying question. What time was it that you logged onto the website to try to download or trying to do the public comment?
At 4:27, 4:28, 4:29, 4:30. And I sent an email to Mr. Williams about 4:37 or 4:38 saying, Mr. Williams, what's going on here? I'm trying to make a comment on the closed session item and I can't. He did respond eventually saying, we don't normally, and I can read you the email, but I'll forward it to you, Mr.
That's fine.
Basically saying that we don't normally take comments before the closed session, which clearly violates the Brown Act.
So you tried to log on to our website at 4:27 to make a comment, and it didn't allow you to do that? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I was not allowed on.
Okay. We'll definitely look into that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have California School Employees Association, number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Dr. Greco?
Good evening, board and community. So just a real quick one for us tonight. It has been a busy and exciting summer around here. We're very grateful for the things that are going on right now. We find ourselves in a unique position as a school district with all of the funds that are coming in from the state and federal government. Had a great meeting with the union today, kind of looking at some of the detailing out some of the options for our expanded learning things next year. There'll be some surveys coming out shortly, and I think there's going to be some exciting opportunities for students and families in this next year. So just kind of a brief update on that. And again, appreciating the positive tenor of everybody, and thank you for the time.
Thank you. Supervisory unit. Public comments. For teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting, give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. Regular board meetings, the public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during the specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of the legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have three public comments tonight. Mr. Carrion, will you be our timekeeper for us? And I would ask that the public be cognizant of the 3 minute time limit. So at the end of 3 minutes, we will ask you to stop. Our first public comment.
Mr. Rasmussen, before you start, yes. Real quick, we actually have four. There's one that did not get emailed, but did come in prior. It's on the same topic.
Okay, let me pull that up. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Mm-hmm. But I don't believe you have an email. I will try to get that to trigger right now.
Okay, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and start, and then maybe by the time we get to that fourth one, we'll be ready to go. Thank you very much, Mr. Karen. Okay, so our first public comment is Norman D. Euler. Mr. Euler?
Good evening.
Hi, go right ahead.
I think that getting the technology thing set up here, and I'll try to move so that the glare isn't right in the video camera, but appreciate the board giving me the opportunity to address you all tonight. First, I'd like to thank and congratulate you for serving in your capacity throughout the last year and a half, especially given all the circumstances with the pandemic and all the demands that have been presented with that scenario. What I am asking to address the board about tonight specifically is the proposed mask requirement for indoor attendance coming up in the 21-22 school year. In the past year and a half approximately, as parents, we have children that have attended Browns Valley Elementary and Foothill Middle School this past year and a half, where we have chose to be in the distance learning option because we do not want to subject our students to any undue anxiety that might be associated with a face mask covering requirement. In my observation at both school sites this past year and a half, there have been various, you know, observations made in terms of those face mask requirements. Specifically, after school was reinstated for attendance this past spring, there were several occasions which I was present and our family was present at the school site where face mask requirements were very loose, to say the least. And in my opinion, the requirement has been a farce. They are not being adhered to. They are definitely not being conducted in any manner which would prevent or stop the contraction of a virus of any kind. What I would advocate is a no face mask requirement for attendance of indoor instruction. Our students have been denied educational opportunities since the spring of 20, and I think that Marysville Joint Unified School District would be in a much better standing with the public, its students, and its staff if they removed any indoor face mask requirements. There is no scientific evidence that would support any face mask requirement indoors, and as the CDC has recommended, in-school attendance can be conducted at this point. Again, I implore you to adopt a policy of no face mask requirements for indoor instruction. And I appreciate your service as school board members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Euler.
Mr. Rasmussen, I have a question.
Yes, Ms. Hasty.
For clarification, Mr. Euler, are you advocating no face masks for just the students or for anybody on site?
Any staff, students, or individual attending or in the presence of any school facility, unless be required for a specific type of task. For example, I am a shop teacher previously. I taught public education for over 20 years in agriculture, in an ag mechanics and animal science capacity. And in some circumstances, yes, a face mask is required to prevent any kind of a respiratory intake of dust, but it does not prevent any kind of virus contraction or spreading.
All right, thank you.
Williams, Sophia. Mrs. Williams, are you there? Doesn't look like Mrs. Williams is present. Next, we have Mona. Mona, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go right ahead, Mona. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to speak. First of all, we salute the flag, and I just want to remind you what it means. Red symbolizes hardiness and valor. White symbolizes purity and innocence. Blue represents vigilance, perseverance, and justice. I point out the word valor, strength of mind in regard to danger, that quality that enables a man to encounter danger with firmness, personal bravery, courage. And I'm asking, where is the courage on the board? Allow parents to decide if their child is going to wear a mask or not, but unmask them and unmask people that are going to work at the district, period. Unmask them. There is so much evidence that it harms the child. And I hope this young lady that brings this forward, you will really take a look at this and see this. But please stand up in the face of evil. To just bow down to it is evil in itself. Stand up for truth and righteousness. Stand up. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Stephanie McKenzie. Stephanie?
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, Stephanie.
Hey, buddy. Nice to be with you. I'm here to talk about mask wearing as well, and I'm a teacher at Ellis School, and so I've experienced having my students wearing masks in the classroom, myself being required to wear a mask as well, and it is not a good thing to do to our students and our teachers if it's not something they want to do. I know that there are some that want to do that. They feel like it's helping them, but in reality, it's not helping anyone, and it's actually causing damage. I'm going to send you, I haven't done it yet, but I have a couple of videos that I'm going to send you, and a report done by a Stanford cardiologist listing the damages that's caused by lack of oxygen and carbon dioxide poisoning. And it's really significant. They found that there was no difference between wearing a mask and not wearing a mask when it came to transmitting any kind of a flu virus or any virus. And they said that people wearing masks were actually 13 times greater at greater risk for getting a flu, and that children were at significant risk for complications and harm. Some of those harms that are actually CDPH or Cal-OSHA refers to as irreversible adverse effects from a lack of oxygen are heart disease and cancers, and then different poisonings of the organs of our body from the carbon dioxide. But things that I saw in my classroom were children who could not keep their eyes open, children who were having difficulty breathing, children who could not concentrate, and just general malaise in the classroom, and fearful and confused looks on their faces. And generally, we cannot communicate. I teach kindergarten. I cannot teach kindergarten with a mask on my face or a face shield. My students cannot communicate with me at all with a mask covering their face. It's just, we just can't do that to them. I would much rather, I know I'm getting my carpets and my desks and my chairs back, all those kinds of things, my tables, and being restored to kind of a more normal classroom setting this year, but I would much rather have individual desks and have kids spaced out and no masks this year and then make them wear masks. And we each can actually be held personally liable for enforcing a medical intervention on a child that can cause harm to them. So I think we need to keep that in mind. Also, Cal-OSHA says that cloth face coverings are not protective equipment and do not protect the person wearing one from COVID-19. So it's been shown. There was actually a study, because I know that one of the concerns is the asymptomatic spread, but there was a study in China, which was very significant. Almost 10 million people were in this study. They all tested positive for COVID-19, yet displayed no symptoms. They did not find one case where one of those asymptomatic persons, meaning they weren't sick.
So, Mrs. McKenzie, I'm sorry, but I am going to have to shut you off. And thank you very much. And if you could send that information, that would be appreciated.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was all of our public comments, right, Mr. Williams? Okay. Next, we have correspondence to the districts. 6 minutes presentation followed by board discussion. Correspondence to the district dated 6/16/21 from Jessica Maslin regarding facial coverings. Jessica, are you there?
Hello again. Yes, I'm here.
Go right ahead.
Okay, I want to say thank you to the parents that are starting to speak up, and Mrs. McKenzie. The study you're referring to, the Wuhan study, is actually, it was of 10 million people in Wuhan, and they only found 300 asymptomatic positive cases. And of those 300, there was no secondary transmission to any of their close contacts. So thank you for bringing that up. I brought it up last time. But what I want to say is, I know the CDPH came out with their mask mandates for everyone, regardless of vaccination status. However, they did give school districts the ability to enforce that mandate however they want. So I don't know if we have some flexibility there, but I still don't see how anyone is okay masking a child, especially now that we're going back full time, 5 days a week. To me, it's child abuse. But besides that, if there are parents and staff that are still concerned and fearful of this virus, you should know that our district, thanks to Travis Barnett, Travis, you'll have to correct me, but Director of Facility Maintenance, I believe, he's the one that proposed that we install ionized air purification throughout our whole school district. And thank you to the board for agreeing to install those, because it's an amazing technology that basically it goes into the HVAC system, it sends out ions into the air, and it binds to particles like viruses, bacteria, molds, and just removes them from the air so that we're not breathing them in. So this technology is going to protect us all much more than any mask ever would. And we still don't have to worry about distancing, having this technology in place. I confirmed with Travis this morning that 90% of our schools have this installed right now, and the remaining 10% will have it done by the time the school starts. One of the first questions I asked Travis about this technology was, is it going to cause any other harmful, particles to be released in the air? And the answer is no, there's no harmful particles. Also, the website that we use, the company is called GPS. They state that there's no harmful ozone emissions that they tested. And if I can show you real quick, I wanted to screen share, but they have some really great third-party testing results that shows that this technology took away, I think, 98 to 99% of SARS-CoV-2 virus from an enclosed room. And that was after the virus had been sitting in there for 60 minutes. So it's amazing. I'm so glad we have this. Thank you guys for protecting our staff and our kids. Last time, I also didn't get a chance to finish talking about all the harms of masks. And Mrs. McKenzie touched on a few of them. Kids, they need to rely on facial cues and recognition to help them with their development and learning. I especially worry about the kids who are learning English as a second language. I don't know if we're doing something different with them, but I'd be very concerned about their learning. And then a new study I found that I didn't have in my last talk was that wearing masks chronically actually increased dental cavities. And the reason for that is because when anybody wears a mask, and especially children, we naturally mouth breathe. And when you mouth breathe, you are decreasing the amount of saliva production in your mouth, which is a very protective, mucosal barrier. It's also changing the pH in your mouth. It's increasing the pH. So you're completely harming your natural barriers when you wear masks. So that puts you at higher risk of dental cavities, gum disease, viruses. Also, what someone else said about kids getting headaches and fatigue and concentration issues, that's all because when you wear a mask, your respiratory rate increases. And later on, if you wear it long enough, it's going to decrease the blood flow in your brain, and the CO2 in your brain. So that's what leads to those symptoms. And also, it induces anxiety and fear, like someone mentioned. I heard two stories from parents in Yuba City. And, you know, in Yuba City, they were eating lunch at school this last year. And two parents found out after several weeks that their little kids weren't eating lunch because they were too scared to take their mask off. They didn't want to get sick, and they didn't want to get somebody else sick. So what are we doing to these children? What are we teaching them? We're putting unnecessary fear in their brains. They don't need to be worrying about that when they're trying to learn. So from a healthcare standpoint, the harms of masks definitely outweigh the benefits, which I can't find any benefits of masks at all. Because last time I told you guys how asymptomatic spread is very rare and uncommon, especially in children. I also told you how masks are pretty much ineffective. We have decades of research showing that. I also mentioned, let's see, that it's illegal actually to force these masks on the kids. And then a new education code I came across is Education Code 48900. And it said it was adopted in July of 2020. It was written before the pandemic, but went into effect July 2020. And it says, kids in K through 8 can't be suspended for disrupting school activities or willfully defying the valid authority of teachers and school personnel. So my question to the board, knowing that this education code is law, if you have some children that aren't going to be
Mrs. Maslin, that is the end of your 6 minutes. So
okay, I just want one question. I want each of the board, since I have discussion time, please each board member individually tell me how you feel about the mask mandate, and if it wasn't a mandate.
So Mrs. Maslin, I'm gonna open it up to the board members to be able to start a discussion with you. Okay, board members, do you have any comments or questions for Mrs. Maslin?
I'm sorry. Can you guys each maybe go around and tell me, you know, if there was not a state mandate, knowing all this information.
Mrs. Maslin, your time limit is up. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I've got a question or sure. I'll answer. You know, if there wasn't a mandate, I'm opposed to the masks. I think it's a joke. What we're doing to these kids is shameful. You know, we've had ample opportunity to get vaccinated. And if you want to get vaccinated. If you don't, you don't. That should be, you know, a personal preference. And my granddaughter, who went to this district till this year, is getting to go to private school this year because of the mask mandates. So, you know, that's my thoughts and feelings on it. And I would be interested in the resolution that I believe that you sent a copy out to us from El Dorado.
I sent you a different copy, but yeah, you can adopt that resolution. I also sent it to our county board of supervisors as well.
Because I think, you know, people need choices. We don't need this stuff thrown on us. You know, we live in America. We live supposedly in a free land, but you know, unless you follow the government's rules, you know, you're going to get in trouble. But, you know, you don't have to show an identification to vote, but you have to show that you're vaccinated to go to a sporting program. So, you know, what are we becoming? So, you know, that's my thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other board members, questions?
Yes. Thank you for your presentation, Jessica. I would like to get that additional information that you had to send out. I'd definitely like to see that information. I do share some of the very same things that Mr. Boom said. As a parent, I'm not in agreement with the mask. I don't support it. I can't support it at this moment. It doesn't make any sense to me right now. I do believe, though, we need some choices. I do believe we need to have more advocation for, you know, students and parents. And I want to thank all the parents and students of students at Marysville Joint that have reached out and either through email and called me and asked me that. And I share those same feelings that Mr. Boom just said as well.
Thank you. Other board members, comments?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything new that I can be said to this discussion as well. I also don't like doing the masks. That being said, with all of the communications that I've been receiving, a lot of anger and frustration being pointed at the board. So please just want to emphasize this isn't something that was at the board level. Obviously, this is direct your attention to the California Department of Public Health. That's where all of this is stemming from. If you,
I'd like to comment on that as well.
It's at a higher level, and you know, as a school district, I think we also have responsibilities not to open ourselves up for liabilities of that nature. That things can happen. So it's kind of a gray area of what can we do. I mean, yeah, if I had a magic wand, bam, no more masks. But I don't want to make that decision and open us up to a liability. But I would be happy for some kind of resolution, maybe a waiver, something. I don't know. I don't have the answer. I'll be honest with you. I don't have an answer, but I don't agree with this. Thank you.
And what you said about CDPH, I'm working with a group called Let Them Breathe. It's now made up of over 12,000 parents all over the country, mostly California. And I just found out this morning that we have drafted our lawsuit and are filing a lawsuit against CDPH this week. About the mask mandate, the distancing, the quarantine, the testing, all of that. So we're going after them. It's happening behind the scenes, but ultimately these legal cases will trickle down to individual school districts. So it's just something to think about. You know, I care about all of you. I grew up with some of your kids. You know, I don't want to see anything bad happen to our school district, but this is the reality that there are a lot of angry parents, and I don't think they're going to comply anymore.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from board members? This is Maslin. Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
The dilemma for the district is huge liability. And we're still in the middle of understanding just how dangerous this virus is. We're learning day in, day after the people who are unvaccinated who are now deathly sick. And so, you know, nobody wants to see staff or students get sick trying to get an education. We have many of our staff who are vulnerable to this virus. So until we get a lot more information on this virus and its ability to mutate and to infect people, we're, as one of the board members said, we're in a huge gray area. And I really feel that everybody is trying to decide on the being judicious and trying to keep from making other people sick, just trying to educate children. So I certainly appreciate all the comments that have been brought forward, both from the public and from the school board. I don't think anybody can underestimate just how upsetting this is for people. We know it is. And we're trying to do the best to protect both our students and our staff. And unfortunately, this is where we're at right now. Thank you.
Yeah, it's also a liability, though, making kids wear masks when there's no long-term studies of the safety of them at all. There was one study cited by the CDC that involved children wearing masks, and they tested them for 30 minutes at rest and 12 minutes walking with a mask on. And they thought that was sufficient evidence to show safety. And it was only 24 kids over the age of 2. One study. So it's a liability to you guys, every teacher, everyone enforcing this on kids. You have a liability too. So I just think you should really advocate for the kids and for us parents that are concerned. we have vaccinations available now, and we have the ionized air purification that I just talked about. These are really excellent mitigation strategies that we already have. There's no need for masks because they aren't effective.
Board members, do you have any other? So, Mr. Euler, this is not a public hearing, so I cannot recognize you at this time.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. I was just asking.
Mr. Euler, I cannot recognize you at this time. So, board members, are there any other comments or questions for Mrs. Maslin? Ms. Maslin, I would just want to say good luck with your lawsuit. I'm curious to see the outcome, so good luck there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
Serving every student every day in every way. Tonight, starting off in terms of service, I'd like to thank Penny Lossing. Penny Lossing's on the agenda tonight for the board to recognize her resignation for retirement. And I just want to thank Penny for her positive, personable, and professional manner and devotion. And in terms of fiscal focus throughout her service, her focus is always on students, on people, and programs. And it's widely recognized throughout the district, and it's respected and it's appreciated. Since she's been here, she's helped arrange to where the district now, will, when the COPS payments start, that be saving $500,000 a year on those costs. Also, what Jessica just shared about those ionized, you know, reduction systems being constructed or installed right now, that the SiteLogic energy efficiency and power producing program, that's going to benefit every site, every program, every student for years, and it's also going to save the district. It's a net cost over all that time, and then just. Also with the Arboga, with the expansion project that's going on, getting that started and getting it going where it's moving and it's on, it's on its timeline. And her leadership and support that she's provided to all the management team members, particularly the leaders of the purchasing, the fiscal, nutrition, transportation, and maintenance, grounds, facilities, and custodial departments, and Penny's PowerPoints, which tonight in the board presentation, she's sharing a PowerPoint. Always have been designed to educate us all, so we are transparent about what our district budget looks like and how it's made up, and that we all have a shared understanding, so that we can all be equipped to engage in problem solving. And so tonight, she's going to share an unprecedented occurrence that that districts throughout the state of California are going to have to face next year. So even though the board doesn't have to worry about it now, that next year the limit to the reserve will be at 10%, it's bringing it to conscious level and giving ideas of ways to approach that in the future. So thank you, Penny, for your service to MJUSD students and staff and families, and good luck to all that you do and pursue. Together, we're working to serve every student every day in every way, and we go back to March 13th, 2020, and in our hope then, we were the last district to close, and from that moment, our desire was to have students attend school 5 days, full instruction, and we're on the precipice of that August 11th. And what the state has done is it set up a system for us to do that. And so on this journey throughout this time, since that March 13th date, we've been on a journey. And in all of the competing, all throughout the spectrum, the different views, the different emotion, the strength of feeling, our compass has been the guidance, the public health guidance. And right now, as we're on this journey, as it's been mentioned tonight, we're still in a pandemic, There's still concerns. We don't know exactly how that virus is going to behave, but there's two gauges that we're looking at. One are the vaccination data, and the other are transmission rates. And in Yuba County right now, our vaccination rate is about 40%. A transmission rate, anybody who's been following it, last week it was single digits, low double digits. By the end of last week, it was 17, 18, 19. Yesterday in Yuba County, it was 39. There are 20 people in the hospital. So looking at the gauges as we're moving along, it's cooking up. So we move to where the guidance is. How can we go to school 5 days a week? The guidance really has four pillars or four key ideas. One is vaccination. Two is universal masking. Indoors, only indoors, not outdoors anymore. And then the third part is very diligent contact tracing. And when students become a direct contact, being very vigilant about that whole approach and reducing the amount of time so that in some cases, students wouldn't even have to miss any school during that 10-day quarantine. And then the fourth piece is the testing. And so in each one of those are the four areas. And as we talk about guidance and we talk about where energy and attention is going to go this year, it's really under one of those four items, but it allows us to do that. Vaccination, the district's been very, first of all, encouraging everyone. It is a choice. It's not required. It's recommended, and encouraging staff, students, and parents to get vaccinated. MJUSD has co-sponsored with Yuba County Public Health and Yuba County Health and Human Services to conduct 13 vaccination clinics. There'll be another one this Friday at Lyndhurst High School. And then that's the 23rd. And then also on July 30th, there'll also be it's open to anyone. The second key idea was the universal mask. So what the public health says about universal mask is that it's the most effective. When we've talked about mitigation layers before, and we've talked about the concept of a piece of Swiss cheese. A Swiss cheese has holes in it. So it's not perfect. It doesn't prevent what goes through it. And so all of these things that we've worked with in the past, the physical distancing, the masking, the disinfecting, the ventilation, the, you know, all these different layers backed up eventually ideally fill the holes and prevent. So all these ideas are mitigation strategies. What the guidance is really doing is it's cleaning schools, teachers, administrators from having to do a lot of different pieces. And they're saying there's one. If you choose one piece of Swiss cheese to mitigate the COVID-19, it would be the mask. And then what they're saying is that the mask is the single best because it prevents both droplets and airborne. So is it perfect? Does it prevent? Is it guarantee? It is a piece. It's a mitigating factor. And with studies, this is how we keep schools open full time. So the trade-off is that we wear a mask. And so a lot of school next year looks really normal. The classrooms, the distancing, Ms. McKenzie shared how she's getting her furniture back. Kids are going to be back. Students and teachers get to connect and be with each other. And so that's the second part. A third part that I heard today from people who are concerned is this concept of that if people are bullied for masks, that that the concept is if everyone wears a mask, or that's the base, that people who, like for staff, there's a different set of guidelines for when school is in session and when school is not. And when school is not in session, it's with Cal OSHA, which are also required legal, and this is for staff, but that concerns about people who aren't wearing a mask might be, whether a person's wearing a mask or they're not, that's a concern. And so with people having, if everybody wears a mask, then because some people are vaccinated, and if they demonstrate verification, they don't have to wear a mask. And if some people who are unvaccinated are too, staff members, but some people are vaccinated, will still go ahead and wear a mask. And if people don't want to share their verification, then they're considered unvaccinated. So what I'm getting at is that it helps people, or one of the reasons guidance is sharing that, is that people aren't different. They don't have to face that challenge. Students don't have to face that challenge when they go to school. There's a standard when they're indoors that the same rule applies. In terms of enforcement, the understanding of enforcement, or the guidance, is that it would be enforced. What they changed is how it's enforced, not whether it's enforced, but how it's enforced. And that's the billion-dollar question, you know, is how that's going to play out. But the key piece is that it's a trade-off to being able, it's a ticket to be able to go full-time instruction, which is what we've been aiming for all this time. The third item is the contact tracing, which, again, we're going to now energy and effort is not in the screening in the morning, or the disinfecting, or the, you know, these pieces. It's that when there's a positive case, identifying who the direct contacts are, working through the new testing and quarantine pieces, and stemming that so it doesn't spread on campuses. And then, you know, Jessica shared about ventilation, and that's one of the key pieces. And our district is in is set up really well for that. But again, it's a piece of Swiss cheese. So we get as many of these to block as many holes as we can. Washing hands, there's still a big emphasis on that. So, and then the new guidance is coming out on athletics, and band and choir and drama in the near future. And so we're leaning toward how to help that. So we're all working together to serve every student every day in every way, and bring everybody back full-time instruction, and help slow and mitigate the spread. The next piece is I wanted to state how fortunate the district is tonight with the opportunity for it was mentioned earlier, is it premature, but the approval of Jennifer Pasaglia as a chief business officer. Right now, with chief business officers or assistant superintendents of business services across the state, companies that run searches for those positions before June had already conducted more searches than any year. And so that gives you an idea. So to get someone who has high level of knowledge and experience, and already knows the districts and knows the personnel and the sites and the budgets, and also can see all the new legislation and the new funding mechanisms that are coming in from the state and federal level, and also having a ground in what's been created here at MJUSD is really helps with the transition, and really helps helps everybody work together to serve every student every day in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 6/22/21 and the minutes for the special board meeting of 6/24/21. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve both.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Boom. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Mr. Rasmussen, I just got a message from her that her internet gave out and she will not be part of the rest of the meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
And Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. I would like to pull an item if you would turn to page 6, please. Item number 4 under Educational Services, Agreement with Education Advanced Incorporated. Are there any other items that board members would like to have pulled? Not hearing any. Is there a motion?
A motion to approve the consent agenda, other than the one pulled item and the correction on page 15.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Mr. Boom and a second by Trustee Gary Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty is absent. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries, 6 yes. So if we'll go to item page 6, item number 4, the agreement with the Educational Advance Incorporated for implementation of Cardonox platform for secondary school sites. When I read this, it seemed like it came to my attention that we had approved this before and went back and looked, and it did look like we did this on February 9th. I talked with Dr. Greco earlier today, but I think it would be important for Dr. Greco to explain the reasoning behind that.
So thank you for the chance to explain. So Cardonox is a master scheduling platform. So most districts usually begin the course request master scheduling process in December, and it's really something that's kind of done in the second semester, kind of culminating with a mad rush towards the end of the year to get everything scheduled before folks are out. So last year, we actually purchased the product late. So just like any contract, it's an annual contract. So it was used this year in the master scheduling. The reason that we bought it this year is when we initially started scheduling, anyone who's done master scheduling knows it'll take hundreds of hours of administrative and counselor time in order to produce the master schedule. In that, a lot of times you're trying to hand balance and figure out course requests, making sure students get what they want. So with Cardonox, part of it is that you assure with like 95% certainty that students are going to get their first request. So out of FPM, that helps us for our EL15 finding, access to broad course study.
Okay.
So there's part of that there. The next piece of it, or I think the more important piece of why we purchased mid-year last year instead of waiting to start this year, was when we were planning this year's master schedule, with the uncertainty of everything, we didn't know if we were scheduling a 6-period day, a 7-period day, if we were doing 6-period with cohorts, or if we were doing 7-period with cohorts. By using Cardonox, we were able to play out a bunch of different master schedules that we would be able to use. if we didn't have that certainty, so that whatever we ended up bargaining or coming out with at this point, that we would have a master schedule that was prepared. So normally you would see this contract coming up annually, right around this time of year. Last year, it came up in the middle of the year. It was something that we scrambled to find to help deal with some of the uncertainty of the master scheduling in the last year.
Thank you very much, Dr. Greco. And I certainly hope that it does work and do what it needs to save time for our folks. Is there any other questions from board members? If not, I'll make a motion to approve the agreement with Educational Advance Incorporated.
I'll second that.
Second.
Second by, was that Mr. Crawford?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Second by Trustee Crawford. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty? Absent. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you again, Dr. Greco. Moving on to page 20, new business. Personnel Services, Resolution 2021-22/01. Declaration of Chief Business Official as a Classified Senior Management Position. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution entitled Declaration of Chief Business Official as a Classified Senior Management Position. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you very much. we certainly want to be cognizant of the fact that this senior management position is recognized not only as a cabinet level position, but also as a contracted employee whose services have been contracted for a set amount of time per the term of the contract. But also, and equally important, is that in declaring that this position, it provides for consistency of past actions by the district, in that this business official, whether an assistant super for business services or a chief business official, has been deemed a senior management employee. So to that end, we want to recommend that the board approve the resolution recognizing this new title as a senior management position.
Thank you. Comments or questions from board members? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty? Absent. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 6 yes. Next, we have approval of employment contract, chief business official. Purpose, the board will consider proposed economic terms and vote whether to approve the proposed contract for the candidate. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you again, President Rasmussen. It's imperative in this particular instance that we comply with the law, government code, and specific to its requirements, make it well aware that this potential agreement specifies the compensatory elements of the contract, and certainly from the standpoint of the public's awareness of what the investment in dollars, of course, that the district will be making over the course of a year and through the term of the contract. It's important to outline in this at this particular time that there are some incongruencies in the number of the work year. For the record, the contract reflects 261 days and at another point reflects 260 days. The record to reflect that this contract will be a 260 day contract. There are years that, as an anomaly, require 261 days of work, but as structured in this contract, it will reflect a 260 day work year. And more importantly, too, as I alluded to a moment ago, recommend the board approve the compensatory terms as specified in this particular agenda item. And move us in the direction of ideally bringing on a new chief business officer, chief business official, in the person of our former employee of a director of business services to take the reins as a CBO.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Questions, comments?
The question I have is why the 3-year contract? It's my understanding that when we bring on a new employee of this stature, we would be offering them a 2-year contract.
Well, ultimately, my response to that is that in terms of consistency with our current assistant suit for business services, who was offered a 3-year contract in the initial employment, we wanted to be consistent with that particular offer in order to ensure that that person would accept.
So, Mr. Carrion, on my
thank you.
Question. Mr. Carrion, my question, if we look at page 293 on our special reports, I thought I heard you say earlier that the contract is going to be 260. I'll wait till you get that.
Yeah, I'm there now. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Do we need to make a change in that contract? Because it states here 261-day work calendar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. Before officially enacting the contract, it will be modified, and the changed version will be sent to the would-be employee and ultimately would be entered into the record as a 260-day contract, per year contract.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from board members? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Doug Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
No.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty is absent. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 5 yes. The no vote is Trustee Davis. Next, we have number 3, Resolution 2021-22/02, Declaration of Need for Fully Qualified Educators. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution for the Declaration of Need of Fully Qualified Educators and the Annual Statement of Need for 30-day substitute teaching and designated subjects permits for the 2021-22 school year. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. This resolution, as required by law, permits the district to employ would-be pseudo-employees in the form of substitutes and or in some cases employ employees, these same pseudo employees or others who are in need and perhaps do not meet the full qualifications. This is a stepping stone into seeking temporary county certificates, emergency permits, waivers, or others of the like in order to ensure that the district needs are met to fulfill classroom settings and ultimately provide stability as best we can to best and better educate our students. So this is an annual resolution required by law and ultimately provides for a gateway to substitute service or the employment of other would-be candidates who may not be fully credentialed.
Thank you, Mr. Carrion. Questions or comments, board members? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Trustee Randy Davis. Roll call vote.
Yes.
Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty's absent. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 6 yes. Personnel Services number 4, tentative agreement with supervisor unit. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the tentative agreement, TA, between the Marysville Joint Unified School District and the supervisory unit supervisors. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you again. Pleased to bring forward this tentative agreement that recognizes discussions fulfilled by the supervisory unit and members of the district's team, and ultimately present to the board for ratification a compensatory package, total economic proposal that reflects a 3% zero one-time off-schedule payment for the past or the 2020-21 school year, retroactive to July 1, 2020, and also improving all wage cells of those occupied by supervisory unit employees and improving that by 2%. There is a Me Too clause within, but ultimately through this agreement enables employees to consider in our collaboration and seeking advice from our payroll department where we might be able to reflect in their pay warrants this new and added increase, and so would highly recommend that the board approve this pending ratification for the supervisory unit.
Thank you. Comments or questions? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by, was that Trustee Boom?
Davis.
I think Trustee Boom was ahead of you, Trustee Davis.
Okay.
Okay. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty's absent. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 6 yes. Number 5, tentative agreement with AMACE. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the tentative agreement, TA, between the Marysville Joint Unified School District and the Association of Management and Confidential Employees, AMACE. Mr. Carrion?
Yes, thank you once again. And in like manner as the previous agenda items, would like to bring forward this particular tentative agreement that was entered into by representatives of the Association for Management and Confidential Employees and district team members that on June 28th, 2021, the district and AMACE came to agreement on a 2-year total compensation package that reflects a 3% one-time off-schedule payment for 2020 and 2021, retroactive to July 1st of 2020. In addition, there is a 2% increase of improving all wage ranges, salary ranges, and steps of the AMA schedules by 2% ongoing. And ultimately, it's important to reflect that much like the supervisor unit, there is a Me Too clause, would strongly recommend that the board approve it. And in consultation with our payroll department, we will explore how quickly pay warrants will reflect these increases.
Thank you. Comments or questions? Entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Gary Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by, was that Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes, sir.
Roll call vote. Trustee Davis. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Boom.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty. Absent. Trustee Gary Criddle.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen. Yes. Motion carries, 6 yes. Next, we have buildings and grounds. Proposal with Dixon Smart Schoolhouse for the Foothill Intermediate School Facility Feasibility Study. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the proposal with Dixon Smart Schoolhouse for the Foothill Intermediate School Facility Feasibility Study in the amount not to exceed $3,000. We'll give you a break now, Mr. Carrion. Mrs. Lossing.
Good evening, board members. This proposal with Dixon Smart Schoolhouse is much like the feasibility study conducted for Covalot Elementary. Mr. Joe Dixon will conduct a review and analysis of the Foothill School and develop a feasibility study for improving the facility to include improving the air quality in classrooms. The result will include solutions to his findings and next steps for the board to review and for board approval. Anticipated funding for the study and future site improvements would be to use COVID funds for that. The amount to be determined based on the results of the study. And if all goes well, this is the first step for Foothill School site improvements.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Lossing.
Okay.
Comments? Board, questions?
This is long overdue.
Yeah, I wanted to say that the past proposals that Dixon's Smart Schools made have been very thorough, and I think we've probably saved $3,000 at least in some of the findings that they had for Covalot. So I think this is money well spent, in my opinion.
My only question is, when do we think Mr. Dixon can get started on that, Travis?
We're in contact right now. I'm actually going up and down and doing a couple site surveys, getting it ready. So as soon as we approve the contract, if the board approves it, Joe and I will be in contact and we'll get this thing up and running. Because as you guys know, ESSER III funds, the COVID funding and what we're trying to do has to be expended. So we hit the ground running. Tentatively, Joe and I have already discussed a plan of attack moving forward to get this thing moving. So pending board approval, we'll be starting immediately.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Trustee Gary Criddle. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Trustee Boom. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Hastie's absent. Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 6 yes. Thank you very much, Mrs. Lossing, Mr. Barnett. Next, we have business services. Discussion regarding fund balance reserves. The purpose of the agenda item is to provide the board with additional information regarding fund balance reserves and the probability of a legally required 10% cap on reserves in the future. This is an informational item only. Mrs. Lossing?
Thank you, President Rasmussen. Mr. Williams, I believe there's a presentation that we're going to view. Okay, and you can move to the next slide, please. So basically, why are we talking about reserves now? And then going over a little bit, reminding everyone of the importance of our reserves. And next slide, please. I'll just get right into it. Basically, you might recall me mentioning the 10% reserve cap that's anticipated to begin with the 22-23 budget adoption for MJUSD. And I mentioned that when the board adopted the current year 21-22 budget. I just wanted to give you, the purpose of this is to give you some more background so that you have the background information when you make decisions in the future. So the triggering of the cap is basically due to certain conditions in the state budget's general fund that have to do with the public school system stabilization account. There's three pieces to that that have to occur. And when they do, then this 10% cap is triggered for all school district reserves or for those that are our size. And how this came about was back in 2014, as part of Proposition 2, there was language included a reserve cap that was two times the 3% state required reserve for economic uncertainty. And so that would have been 6%. But in 2017, our good friends at the California School Boards Association, CSBA, they sponsored Senate Bill 751 that raised that cap to 10% for districts our size, because everyone understood that that districts need to have reserves. So the next slide, and this is one of the, this came from, I believe, the Department of Finance, I believe it was, that this was, they did a study on district, school district reserves. And this is five main reasons that we have this: managing our cash flow. And I don't think we have far to look back to recall the biggest cash deferrals districts ever experienced in this last year, 2021. So because of the district's solid reserve, we didn't have to borrow money, borrow any cash to get us through those cash deferrals. Next, mitigating the volatility in funding or expenditures. And again, we didn't have far to look back. May 2020, the state was telling us we were going to get a 10% reduction to this past year's budget, which didn't materialize, thankfully, but it's just that that volatility in funding or in expenditures, because, you know, COVID happened and, you know, blew the expenditures up by far. Addressing unexpected costs. An example of this is, remember how Mr. Barnett would always say that he tried to keep money in reserve, that one-time facility money, in case the known heat and air system at Lyndhurst High School was on its last leg. And, you know, now that's getting fixed through our SiteLogic energy efficiency project. But it's things like that that can come up as unexpected costs. Another reason to have good solid reserves, maybe saving for large one-time purposes. As we all know, we have aged facilities and we're never quite sure what we don't know about that might come up. And then reducing costs of borrowing money. You know, November 2020, we refunded the COPS, Certificates of Participation, long-term debt that the district had. And we received an excellent interest rate that saved us this $11 million. Would we have been eligible for that without a good solid reserve? You know, I don't know for certain, but it's quite possible we wouldn't have been. So just a reminder of why our reserves are so important to us. So next slide, please. So, and then the all important reserves being one time in nature. So what does that mean? We never want to spend them on expenses that are ongoing. Ron Bennett, you know, God rest his soul, he was the president of school services, and he always says, don't spend your reserves on anything that eats, meaning ongoing expenditures. And then also reserves being a key indicator of school districts' fiscal health. So next would be the details, the components of our ending fund balance. I'm going to break it down for you. It'll just won't take very long, and then you guys will have this background when you make decisions in the future regarding the components. So there's really five components. That last one on the lower right, reserve for economic uncertainty, is really part of the unassigned, but it has its own little place. So specifically, this is always the second page of our SACS reports, our standardized account code structure, state budget reports that come out four times a year. And the next one will be the unaudited actuals for last year. And the second page of those formal state reports has the beginning fund balance, the ending fund balance, and then it shows these components. So non-spendable is always our revolving cash, which is sort of like the district's petty cash. We keep $30,000 in there in case there's an immediate need for writing a check. It gets balanced routinely through the fiscal department and audited, but things like perhaps a timesheet was missed in payroll and somebody has to get paid immediately. So we have that revolving cash is sort of like considered the district's petty cash for those purposes. Also non-spendable in the components of any fund balances are stores. That's the official term. But what that really means is everything that's sitting in our warehouse. It's all of the paper, pencils, and the myriad of physical materials they have out there. There's a running total kept of that inventory, and then that's placed in that component of any fund balance. And then if there were any prepaid items, that's a placeholder for that, but we don't have any of those this year. Assigned are the amounts that are intended to be used for specific purposes, but they don't really meet that higher classification of committed or restricted. And if you'll recall, when we adopted the budget, there were a list of those things like one-time facilities, some of the 2020 COPS payments that are upcoming and due. We reserve or assigned ending fund balance to help pay for three elementary counselors that had previously been grant funded. We keep track of the site discretionary allocation carryover there. And so there's this list. And then if you recall, I added the five-year technology replacement total that Brian Williams put together for us. And then also the five-year textbook adoption or curriculum adoption amount that we're going to need to expend to keep our curriculum current for all of our students. And those two new amounts were placed in the assigned area of the components of any fund balance. Next would be the restricted, and that's the legally restricted amounts only to be used for the purpose stipulated by the provider of the funds. And some of those are the federal government, like our Title 1, 2, and 3. And then also now our COVID funds reside there on the restricted side because they're given a tracking resource code that is restricted in nature, that those funds can only be spent for those very specific purposes. Then we come to the committed. I'm going to jump over to the right there. And those are funds, it's above the unassigned and assigned level. Those are committed funds that are committed at the highest decision-making authority of the district, which is you, the school board, and it takes a resolution in order to commit funds. And currently, we do have committed fund for other post-employment benefits. At some point, the district had passed a resolution to commit those funds to be used only for paying for other post-employment benefits for employees of the district. So then that the final is the unassigned, and that's anything that's not one of the others. But also within that assigned, there's always a 3% state-required reserve for economic uncertainty. We call it the REU, and that always resides there in the unassigned. So that's basically the components in a nutshell. And the next slide, that's the words, and here's some numbers to make it a little more real. And this is a picture of our 2021 estimated actuals. So when we adopted this current year's budget, we took the final look at last year. Now these numbers will change because when they close the books, there's gonna be changes as they do that. But here you'll see, like I said, the beginning balance, ending balance, components. So there you see the revolving cash, the stores, and then the restricted, you see the two columns, the unrestricted and restricted. We always have the two sides of the budget and then the combined, just the total of those. The restricted falls on the restricted side, and then everything else is under the unrestricted. And you see there those other post-employment benefits that are committed. And then what's important here is that what adds up to make the cap, the 10% cap that we have to be concerned about, are both the assigned and unassigned. So these two amounts are what count toward the 10% cap. And I think that's important because otherwise we don't know where we are and where we need to get to. So the next slide, please. This is doing the math on how we know how to do that. So in the square or rectangle there is that reserve for economic uncertainties. Well, remember I said that's always 3%. So if you divide that out, you get the 1%. And 1% times 10 is our 10% cap, right? So that's the amount that we're obligated to not have, to not exceed in these two designations, right? So next slide, please. Okay, so then if we take the cap amount that we've just determined, and then we look at what that assigned is, and if I had rounded these off, it would have been a little easier, but I left the actual numbers. So, but the assigned, and then that reserve for economic uncertainty, and then our unassigned, and we get the amount that counts toward the cap. So then you subtract out what the 10% cap can be, and you would see what we would consider over that cap amount. So then what do we do? So next slide, please. So here's some solutions for that. Next slide, please. And I give you kind of a litany of solutions because while we are really strong in the amount of our reserves, we have a whole lot of purposes to use them, currently and then in the near future and then, you know, even the 5-year look. But we could, these are just some examples. So then you can ruminate on them, you know, have further discussion down the line. But I anticipate that at least by the adoption of next year's budget, you'll have to make some decisions regarding this. That's why I wanted to give you this primer, if you would, just so that you have more knowledge about it. So one thing that could be done is committing funds for the future COPS payments that we know we have. And then in line with committing funds, some districts are known to commit additional reserve percentage over that 3% or even over the 10% to protect the district from unforeseen circumstances. When you have revenue shortfalls, when you have unexpected expenditures, you know, we have a large reserve, but we have large costs and potential. And then there could be large revenue shortfalls as well. So that's another proposed solution for the 10% cap. Another might be to take those 5-year technology replacement or 5-year curriculum textbook adoption amounts and make those a locally defined restricted resource. I've seen districts do that as well. And it moves it out of assigned and unassigned. It makes it a more firm commitment to using those funds in that manner. And it's also transparent. You know, you can note what those are when you list the restricted funds in every financial report. And then you could also, another option, we know our aged facilities. We currently move money every year over to the Fund 14 deferred maintenance. It's by no means a robust amount considering the amount of sites we have and the age of those sites. So we could transfer some fund balance to Fund 14. There's probably many other things that not sharing tonight, but that can be thought about, and then you can consider when you make decisions in the future. I think there might be another slide, maybe not. Yeah. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer. And again, just I had mentioned it in the budget adoption, so I wanted to just give you a little more background and get you prepared for the future.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Lossing. Board members, do we have some comments or questions? Mrs. Lossing,
Go ahead,
Randy.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The one thing that has come up has been to get the Marisol High School track basically rebuilt. And I'm certainly hoping that in all of our discussions, we don't forget that. I know when I was going to the high school, it's the same track I went to now, almost 50 years ago. I certainly hope that that, as well as Foothill, which is in desperate need of a lot of fixing, are the two that come to mind to use this kind of one-time money towards. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. So Ms. Last thing, I couldn't remember on our current budget, weren't we deficit spending this year? Can you remember, tell me how much that was?
I do. I have that right here. As a matter of fact, this year in the unrestricted side of the budget, for this current budget, being fiscally conservative in the revenues and the expenditures, $1.7 million in the unrestricted. And then the restricted, of course, needs to pay for itself other than the amount we contribute to both special education and the routine restricted maintenance. So
we're approximately almost $2 million in deficit spending?
Correct.
Board members, do you have any other comments or questions? Mr. Huerta, again, this is not a public hearing, so I am not going to recognize you. If it was a public hearing,
it's a public agenda item. I'm allowed to ask a question. Am I not? It is a public agenda item.
Right. If you would have turned in a public comment card. So
I'll put in a public request for information under the California Public Records Act. Then.
Thank you. Board members, do we have any other comments or questions? Well, Mrs. Lossing, thank you very much for that information. That is our last agenda item. So we are going to adjourn the open session meeting. We're going to take a short break, board members, and then there is some details that we need to talk about in closed session. So if we will take maybe a 2-minute break. Again, we're adjourning the meeting from open session.
I'm sorry, but what is the closed session item? The public should have a right to know what the closed session item is. What is the item?
Right. So it is not something that I don't think I can disclose, Mr. Herrera.
You can't have a closed session item without disclosing what the agenda item is. It's the public's right to know what it is about under the California Public Records Act and under the Brown Act, sir. Come on.
Right, but not all items need to be agendized, Mr. Huerta.
Yes, they do.
Thank you. Okay, meeting adjourned.